But Shannon, it gets down to the issue in our programs for medical oncologists. We're trying to sort this out as well. Pretty much the question, okay, you're going to get the surgery, you're going to get the chemotherapy, but are you going to get a PARP inhibitor? And if so, which one? But also, are you going to get Bev?
Right.
And are you going to get both? So I guess it brings up what I have been hearing is it sounds like the decision about Bev and the decision about PARP are kind of independent. I don't know if you would agree with that, Shannon. It kind of reminds me, again, when we were talking about ER positive, HER2 negative breast cancer, you decide about hormones and you decide about chemo. It kind of seems like, and in terms of Bev, we had this question that we asked the audience in terms of when Bev is used. What I've been hearing from oncologists is they think about Bev when people, for example, have ascites, where they have a lot of disease, not option A necessarily, where they have optimal debulking. So what is the kind of patient, the clinical situation, Shannon, where you maybe are going to be thinking about including bevacizumab with chemotherapy and as maintenance, regardless of whether you're going to give a PARP inhibitor, Shannon?
Yeah, certainly. You're exactly right. You make that bevacizumab choice pretty upfront before you even may not know the results of your germline and somatic testing. Bevacizumab has an indication with chemotherapy for all comers in the upfront setting, but there's many of us that do use some clinical features, and ascites is one. The other thing I really think about is if I have a patient that has stage four, you know, there was arguably a subset analysis, but we have to use something to make our decisions. And that subset analysis showed that when we give bevacizumab with chemotherapy to a stage four patient, her survival looks like a stage three patient. And that's pretty exciting because we know we do really poorly with those patients that are the highest stage. And so that's the population that I tend to use bevacizumab with. And now given these new data around PARP, I'll use my testing to determine if I'm going to add PARP to her bevacizumab. Am I going to switch completely to PARP or am I just going to continue bevacizumab? So I do use the testing to help me make that decision.
When Dr. Weston says stage four, she's referring to pleural effusion, correct?
Pleural effusion or mediastinal disease, any bulky liver disease. I mean, certainly pleural effusion is one to dry up that fluid, mm-hmm. just like we would right. be ascites, but also just stage four in general. Yeah, thanks.
So I just want to run through a few of the other questions that we asked just as things to think about. I guess one of the issues there isn't much debate about. So this question says, in which of the following situations is it standard that everybody is going to use a PARP inhibitor? And I think the answer is B. There's a lot of debate about people who don't have BRCA germline, but there's no debate about that. Standard of care. Another question we had is, and at this point you should know the answer, which of the following is approved in patients who don't have BRCA mutations of any type, somatic, anything? And the answer to that is niraparib. That was the approval we just showed you. So there is that option. You're not going to get as much benefit as you go down the line, less BRCA-ness or less mutation, but there's still some benefit. We mentioned the fact that if you want to use bevacizumab and a PARP inhibitor, so for example, let's say somebody with a BRCA germline and ascites, right now, in terms of FDA approvals, it's going to have to be olaparib. So I guess at this point, Dave, are we substituting other PARP inhibitors or sticking with olaparib if we're going to use Bev, niraparib if it's not BRCA?
Well, you know, this is really the question that we're facing right now, which is what will the payers reimburse? I try to stick to the label. Why bring that uncertainty in? And I also try to stick with the data. So the data with regards to Bev and olaparib is the combination approval. You know, one thing that is so important, I think you said this, Neil, was that was the only trial that had an active comparator. All the other trials had versus placebo. So the benefit we're seeing was versus a known approved agent, Bev. So when we look at this, I do try to stick with the label. I look at those patients not just who are BRCA positive. In my mind, that's very straightforward. Those all get PARP. Now, if I have a high-risk patient that Shannon referred to, I would consider continuing the Bev. But there's another group of patients that's HRD positive, but really the FDA indication is genomic instability. So that includes the commercially available Myriad test, which looks at HRD. While I prefer getting the entire or a bigger picture for all these mutations. So I use usually Foundation Medicine, but there's all the commercially available. And the Foundation Medicine gives you this loss of heterozygosity, which is also considered genomic instability. So those areas, I can use that test to get more information and then base my use of the olaparib and BEV in that genomic instable patient population.